Take down some live. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live. I am Kay Thompson, and tonight we're going to be getting some good information from a number of people I'm waiting for. You know, Byron Sanders, and also who else? Fair boy, we're looking for Wayne Gilman. Okay, and they'll be coming on very shortly. So, what a day! What a day! What a time! Trump. We're going to be talking very much about Donald Trump. Couldn't resist it. I wish we didn't have to, but we have to. Everybody's very interested in following him. I don't think he knows what he's doing, and a lot of people I know, they don't think he is in his right mind. Okay, so, well, we'll find out. Anyway, we're going to be having on the show, Bernard Marsh is going to be on. And he is an actor and author, and he has worked on Broadway, and he worked on Broadway. He was one of the key people because he was involved with the union people, and he was very concerned, of course, with all the actors and the actors getting treated rightly, and also being made to get their checks and then the remuneration on time, and all that kind of stuff that, you know, a representative, you know, from a union does. He also is the author of The Great White Way, Great White Lies, A Lie Can't Live Forever. So Bernard Marsh, so we're waiting for him to call in. Also, Wayne Gilman, as I said, and Byron Saunders, they'll be calling in very shortly. As a matter of fact, I think there is it Byron on the air now? Click him in. All right, Byron, are you there?
I am here.
Why are you doing
Thank
so?
You.
Okay, but why didn't you say so, Byron?
Well, I snuck in on you, Kay. And it's so interesting because Bernard Marsh is a dear friend of mine as well. So,
great.
Talked to him about his book and his recent past.
Yeah.
I mean, Bernard is a brilliant actor. And I actually I produced Bernard in a show in Atlanta. So we got lots in common this evening. Yes, ma'am. See, the world is small.
I know. Yeah, he's great. And so are you, of course. Now, Wayne there? Wayne is not on yet? Okay. He may be out of the town. I don't know. But anyway, this is a pretty busy time for people, you know, here, not only involved with Donald Trump, but a whole lot of different events and things going on that people want to know about. We have arts festivals here in the New Jersey area, in Montclair, New Jersey, which is right across the street, practically from the village, from the area of New York that, he resides in. Anyway, see if we can talk about Trump first. Do I want to talk about Trump first? No, I really want to talk about Bernard. You know, he is, I wanted to ask him about Hamilton, you know, that play that is getting still rave reviews. What do you think, Byron? Have you seen it, Byron?
I have not seen Hamilton. I mean, I've seen all of the pieces except running up to Hamilton, you know, all of the trailers and the awards it's won. And it is indeed a groundbreaking piece of musical theater that fuses hip-hop, you know, rap, and history. And why not? Mm-hmm. I think it's... especially since right now in our educational system, and including all the way up into the current chief of staff, commander in chief, knowing little history. That's
Byron,
a problem.
Byron, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute because Wayne Gilman is on the line. Let's get Wayne in.
Sure.
Wayne, are you there?
Good evening. Good evening, Kay. Good evening, Byron, Eric, everyone.
Hello, Wayne.
And I don't want to interrupt Byron. He was on a critical point there. I just wanted to hear what he had to say.
Basically, Wayne, I was just indicating that one of our country's biggest problems right now is that so many of our citizens don't know the history of the United States. And it's apparent from the persons who are miseducated all the way up to the president who continues to show how little he understands or recognizes world history, American history in particular, and his gaffe that he has made over the last 8 months concerning U.S. history is indicating even more and more every single day why he is incompetent and does not deserve to be in the Oval Office.
I so second true. That.
But the you musical know. Hamilton is brilliant. Just brilliant.
Oh, you had a chance
yes.
to see it.
No, I haven't seen it, but the people have told me, and I know some of the people, you know, around it and how it got to Broadway, and the fact that Lin-Manuel Miranda is as his recognition grew from the Heights, about the Washington Heights area, and,
right.
and that he's, I mean, he's brilliant to be able to fuse the music of hip-hop with history and a brilliant presentation about Alexander Hamilton, of course, which gives recognition to Hamilton Heights up in Harlem. You know, his home is there, and it was actually moved from its former location to the new location, which is also a feat of preservation and history unto itself.
Right.
And people should visit the home, the Hamilton Heights, and understand what that all means.
The connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, and Kay, I didn't mean to interrupt, but, you know, there's one thing that really bothers me about Broadway, and maybe Eric could even comment on this, is the fact that, beg your pardon?
Wayne, Eric is not here. He's on
assignment.
Oh, he's
not here tonight. Okay.
Yeah, so.
He's entitled. But it's well, you've always taken over. But the thing is that it's so expensive for people like us to even go to see a play on Broadway these days. I mean, I'm just astounded at what they charge for even some of the least expensive artistic developments out there. That you know, it just bothers me. And I know that there are probably discounts, things that I'm not totally aware of, but, you know, maybe Byron, you could talk about that because I guess that's more your area than mine. You know, it's not my wheelhouse.
Well, the ticket prices are outrageous, especially for those who want to see a Broadway show. And
of course, that has been a serious problem with the show. I've never heard of a show on Broadway with that kind of prices, really.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And it just points to another factor about culture in New York City and the support of the cultural arts community to sustain our cultural institutions based on city finances. And I don't know if most people really recognize this. Our cultural capital of the country, New York City, spends less than 1% of its tax dollars in the cultural arts community. Now, how do
That's
you
amazing.
Sustain to be the cultural capital of the country and you're not providing cultural institutional support? It's a damnable shame.
By the way, you guys, my two daughters went to see Hamilton. And it cost them how much, Lisa? $1,800 per ticket? Yes, and Lisa's going in for it, right? And also now, she and my daughter, Christy, went to see it.
Yeah.
Why does how
I mean,
in the world
I can't. That's almost like
high.
A mortgage payment for me. You know,
really?
my little cousin, who's an actress, you know, she could afford. I mean, she was even complaining about the price, and I know that she could easily afford it. You know, I just find that sinful. That it's shameful that, you know, here's a product about the culture in which we live in, and yet the very people who should be at least getting a chance to witness its prominence in
Tell
such an environment like
Absolutely.
Broadway can't afford to see it, you know, because they got to
Absolutely.
Think about either living or putting meal on the table, or, you know, it's crazy.
You know, and Lisa's right here, so I'm going to ask her to say two words about Hamilton since you and Christy went to see it. Lisa, come on.
Yes, I went to, my sister and I went to see it. She was one of her clients treated us. And so actually we were the third row from the stage. It was a great seat.
Wow.
And they were $1,800 per pop. I mean, four of us went. I mean, that was, it's just ridiculous. I've never even heard of a ticket being that much.
Right.
But I just want to say, in the future, what they're starting to do, I don't know if you know about audiblebooks.com. They will be doing Broadway shows that everyone can afford to see. They have grants now for people that want to, that are, you know, just entering the, you know, Broadway, the playwriting, or even if you're a veteran. And I think the grant's going to be starting this fall, a $5 million grant for all the new playwriters and the veterans, so they can get their pieces on Broadway that they haven't been able to. And they will keep the prices very low so a whole family can go. That's one of Audible's philosophies. So I think it's going to be interesting to check it out.
We're waiting for Bernard. But that's so annoying, really. It is so annoying to think that they would charge those kind of prices for that. Now, I guess, if you can get it, charge it. However, that's so awful not to open that wonderful musical. Was it a musical? It was a musical, yeah. Choreography? Who did the choreography?
The history lesson. It was everything, you know. So
exactly.
And also just
what made it so possible, then?
I don't know. It just made you excited.
It made it so exciting, yeah.
It was exciting because of the fact it was history. That history is normally boring, you know, because they usually take out the best part, which are the brown people. And so this you know, they actually put the piece about the brown people in it.
Wow.
And so the immigrants were very important. And then he also makes his personal statements to what's going on right now. And the play is just timely. When you get a chance, because they do have lotteries. You know, I know someone who also went to see Hamilton for $10. So you have to check out the lottery and perhaps, you know, try to get there that day. So they do. He definitely is very aware of a producer. What's his name? Manuel? What's his
Byron. He's going to have to help us with that one. I forgot. I think it's Lynn Emanuel, right? Or Manuel.
Well, he's definitely trying to. He's helping people and let you do, you know, win a lottery, and so they can also do this to do the play.
Okay. That's
definitely something everybody should check out, because it's really living history. It's the real history of what's going on. So I didn't know Alexander Hamilton was black, but it was fantastic.
He was born in Charlestown, St. Kitts and Nevis, and it has been said that his mother had mulatto blood, and so Alexander Hamilton has been clearly identified historically
as the first black.
So there's so much history, as you said, Lisa. That's really imperative that we understand how America's history is about a cultural mix of many races, of many ethnicities. And this, because it impacts on immigration and all the things that are going on in our country right now, which of course is trying to whitewash the history. And so Hamilton kind of brings back a reality to the understanding that there are many things in our closet that people may not want to talk about, but they are actually about the truth. So we need to speak truth to wisdom, not truth to power, truth to wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And really, and you know, history is so important in the school system. And, you know, black history has not been taught on a very strong level in any of the schools here, you know, in the United States. True black history. And, you know, one thing I also want to tell you guys that you remember Professor Dr. William Katz?
Right.
He also sent me about a week ago a book on slave narratives, the actual slave narratives. And, you know, he's one of the most prolific writers on black American history. So he's going to be coming on again. This is one of his books in his, you know, library of all his books, Black Indians. That is so fascinating, you know, especially with the first school that had Indians going to it was Hampton University.
That's right.
Hampton,
Virginia. Absolutely. Learned a lot of stuff from it. And he's absolutely wonderful. And I'm hesitating because of the fact that I have a cold and I'm sniffling. So don't pay attention to my sniffling. But anyway, so we're going to be talking to Bernard He's going to be calling in very soon, I hope. But, you know, let's see. I'm going to give him a ring. So, but we can still be talking about, we're going to be going into Trump. Okay, I know you guys are dying to get hold of
him. Yeah. Well, there's so much going on. I don't know.
He was a disaster at the United Nations. Let's face it.
Yes, he was. He was a total and complete disaster. And you know, the sad part about it is, here you have the leader of the world, the free world, supposedly, at the United Nations, threatening to exterminate 25 million by way of nuclear, armament and destroying North Korea. And while you're in the midst of making that declaration, Mother Nature is kicking your butt, Trump, over the country. We got St. Thomas destroyed, Puerto Rico, 100% without power. St. Croix. We've got American citizens in dire need, and you're standing there talking to the world about blowing up the world, about blowing up North Korea, and you can't even afford to address the pain and desperation and destruction leveled by Mother Nature in Houston, Texas, Galveston, Beaumont, down along the Louisiana coastline.
Mexico, with the earthquake.
That's right. And Mexico, you can't even address the problems in North America. And here you are. You know, this is why we have to remove him. It's time to remove him and stop the folly, because this man is bent on destroying and creating Armageddon. And we got to remove him before it happens.
I think it's slowly happening. I think everything that you've been, forecasting in the last couple of shows that you've done with us, Byron, has basically come to pass. That whole Manafort investigation is like really, really very telling now, and we're on the precipice of change. But you know, it amazes me with his blowhard demeanor and bluster during that whole UN presentation, how his poll numbers have suddenly gone up, because Americans, those who are so freaking sophomoric, I don't mean to even, use anything that would be considered an expletive at this point, but it just annoys me how angry I get when I hear and see that his numbers go up behind some vitriol that he does, some performance and bullying and name-calling, during this UN address. Can't think of any president who's ever done that in that arena.
Well, Wayne and Kane, consider this. The poll numbers, let's reflect on just the poll numbers. His poll ratings right now range somewhere between 25% and 35%, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're low.
And
they're
it could even be lower than that, given upon which poll you want to read. But let's just say the general means right now, medium range, is that it's somewhere between 25% and 35% nationally. If you take that, and yes, he continues to play specifically to his base, let's dissect the poll numbers themselves, because at that point, the rest of the country, which pretty much is in unison saying right now that they are tired and fed up with Trump, that his base is only the voice, and they can be 80% of them still supporting Trump, but they only represent 25 to 30% of
right,
the country.
Right, exactly.
Period. So it's a minority, and we need to stop acknowledging his base as some kind of fear factor for which we cannot make determination left or right whether this man should be removed or not, because he doesn't have the support of the country.
No, he doesn't, and I am hopeful that the world sees it that way. I'm hopeful the world body sees it that way. I mean, even North Korea's response today, assessing that whole speech is coming from one. They described Trump as a barking dog. To me, it may sound like tit for tat, but I just really thought that was appropriate.
Militarily, it's an easy solution, I can tell you. Because of the technology and the amount of money that we have spent on Star Wars, you remember Star Wars, Kay and Wayne and Star Wars technology that we implemented under the Reagan-Bush administration. And billions of dollars that we put into that, we created it to do it specifically one thing, shoot down enemy intercontinental ballistic missiles, which means, by way, if Trump and the military really wanted to stand by their wolf tickets that they've been selling recently, it would be very easy to, at the point at which that North Korea sends a missile over top of Japan, and who is one of our allies, and just shoot it down and dare them to come back again. That's it. Period.
Yeah, that's and it's been discussed, Byron. But I mean, at the same time, you know, I think this is all a money game too when it comes to the economy and how the whole Asian market perceives Kim and his dependence on them to a certain extent. You know,
okay.
I mean, certainly they know this guy is tyrannical in his behavior. They know he's capable of doing anything, and you know. I have to give it it was pretty good on his part to come up with this moniker of Rocket Man, but at the same time, you know, you're dealing with someone who is not necessarily stable, and then we have somebody in our own, you know, a warhouse who, you know, barely is literate, let alone stable. You know, I mean, he has no clue in terms of running the government. And he feels that running the government is the way he runs his real estate business deals, and it's shameful that he's not been able to come across with anything. But he has a lot of bluster every 2 minutes when he gets a chance to tweet or stage one of his town hall meetings, because you know it's rare that he actually gives a news conference. And the deal is that when he's questioned about things that. He even said there's always some retraction later on or some twist, you know, or some condemnation of the people who are critical of him, you know.
Sad. Wayne and Byron, did you see his speech at the United Nations?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Did you see? Yeah. It was absolutely ridiculous. Did you notice the people leaving and how uncomfortable they were? Let's describe that for people. Yeah. It was absolutely awful. He is.
It was an embarrassment. It went way beyond to address the world body in that manner.
That's
and
right.
Like he was
horrified.
The emperor. Yeah, they had to be.
Yeah.
The emperor has been.
Well,
too.
This country
has
reached a new level of decadence, and it's unfortunate that we're at this point now. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take other than a new election and just some reconstruction of the political landscape, because I know we Democrats have a lot to be thankful for in that we have players that are out there who could possibly, you know, be the standard bearer when the next time comes around for us to seek the White House again, hopefully without any interference from outside sources. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of cleaning up that we need to do ourselves in order to make this happen. And also to get those who feel that they're still disenfranchised, if there's any way that we could turn around and somehow undermine his support of that very audience that he feels. I'm not talking about the skinheads and the KKK and people, that element, but those people who are truly suffering out there, you know, in the coal belt, you know, the mining industry, and who are unwilling to make an effort to change, you know, their careers because, you know, life is or their longevity of what they were doing before is no longer in the cards if we wish to have a clean environment, you know, in this country or in the world. So it's just unfortunate. And I don't think enough is even talked about what opportunities exist out there for solar in the solar industry, you know, a lot. And I don't think the Democrats do enough to even talk about that, you know, in terms of perhaps getting the word out that these people who feel that the only way to go is to continue doing what we're doing. And you could see what's happening with the environment. I've never seen a hurricane season like what we've witnessed in the last couple of months. You know, I remember as a child, you know, Kay, you were around when we used to cover We covered Hurricane Andrew, and I've never seen anything where it's been back to back to back, and there's no telling when it will end.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
The other thing, Wayne and Kay, that I'm amazed at right now, this new Senate effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act is absolutely insane, considering that health care is the one critical issue that Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, St. Croix, Houston, they need health care.
Yeah.
And you're going
right.
to
mm-hmm.
you're going to repeal the one thing that they can hold on to that will give them the benefit of having the support necessary to sustain them during their time of crisis and need.
Exactly.
Is just unbelievable. How dare you put that on the American public in the midst of their crisis? That's insane.
Also, what he is doing and what he wants to do, I think he has, you know, a drive in himself. But he wants to destroy the Obama legacy.
He wants to destroy
anything that Obama developed. And then, you know, and got passed in Congress, anything. He wants to destroy this whole legacy, his face. He wants to just destroy him, period. And that's very unfortunate. Because
if
Obama
that's not the height of white supremacy and racism.
I think, you know what? Wait a minute. Let me finish, guys. I think that if Ophelia Obama, is her name Ophelia? Or am I getting the wrong way? Name. Obama's wife.
Oh, Michelle.
Is it Ophelia?
Michelle.
Why was I saying Ophelia? Ophelia
that
Mountain.
Might be
but
her
anyway,
or
Michelle. No,
Okay, you're with us.
No, I'm having moments.
Yeah,
because
when you say that, then I feel old. Go ahead.
It's not old, believe me. But anyway, I really think he's trying to destroy Obama. Anything about Obama, you know, and Michelle.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. And Obama is not going to let that happen. Did you see him speak the other day? Did you hear him?
Oh, yeah. He's coming out quietly now. I mean, I shouldn't even say quiet. I think the issues that he has no choice. Unlike past presidents who've quietly gone into the sunset and have accepted whatever criticism may come from their successor, you know, the climate in this country is so... It's so divided. I mean, it's so polarized that if we don't hear from the person that, you know, Trump is constantly criticizing, I just feel that we're at a loss because, you know, we went from royalty to garbage. And people need to be reminded of what we've lost, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sad enough that we've lost the moral compass. But, I mean, the bottom line is, it's just that the constant bombardment on Obama, I don't even remember Bush doing this to Clinton. I don't remember Bush 1 doing it to who was there before? I want to say Carter or Reagan, but I just don't remember a succession of presidents being so critical the way, you know, you may hear certain things. And even Obama, when he was criticizing Bush, he made reference to things that were happening. We're in the midst of a major recession, depression as far as our community is concerned,
exactly.
You know, 10 years
mm-hmm.
ago. You know, so he had every right, you know, to have to say what he had to say because, you know, even Bush acknowledged that he didn't know what happened. He put people in charge and the banks run amok, you know. Everything he was hoping that things, I guess in his own mind, he was hoping that things were turning around, you know, for the betterment of the country. But, you know, the bottom line is that the banks, you know, they were like, kids with their hands in a cookie jar, you know. So it's the same thing now as we look back at that and to see the progress that we've made from that period to what's going on right now. Trump is just really trying to turn the clock back, and I just don't see where it's going, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some people who feel that, you know, he'll give us the tax reform and the tax break and this will happen and that would happen. I just don't see it right now without somebody being affected.
Yeah, what about his health plans that are non-existent,
well,
or that they're taking away from children?
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't get over, though, that appearance at the United Nations. That was a complete embarrassment. You know, it was worse. You know, it was like hearing from a dictator, really, okay?
Yeah.
And the picture that I have when I first heard him announce that he was running for the presidency was a picture of a Hitler standing there. I'll never forget that. As soon as he announced a long time ago, it looked like he reminded me of Hitler.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
It's just sad. You know, I just think it's a matter of time, though. I hold the optimism that, you know, Mueller is on the case, and, you know, just doesn't seem like there's any indication where they're going to be, of this investigation waning in any way that would be in the president's favor, because as time goes on and more comes out, you know, it's just amazing what was going on in the last 18 months before the election, and even after the election, even the first couple of months of his presidency, you know, the collusion that was going on, and he's still in denial, and he's still trying to cover up for his son, you know?
What do both of you think should happen, you know, to turn this whole thing around? How can the United States of America come together and either kick him out of office, sue him for something, all the mistakes that he has made, and I don't want to say the ultimate thing, but anyway, what can be done? What are the suggestions out there? What are people doing in the Congress? What are they doing, you know, in the United Nations, really?
Well, of the three historic levels available to us constitutionally, one is the 25th Amendment, which can challenge him on his health and mental state of mind.
Uh-huh.
That's one area which has been discussed a couple of weeks ago by Republicans. The second choice is by way of impeachment, which is rolling in the House, moving forward, and every week that he continues to show disdain for both parties, basically, you know, he's trying to set up his own oligarchy, and he has no love for the Republican Party, that's obvious, and he's this new bromance with the Democratic Party is only temporary. That will gain a lot more traction as Mueller's investigation continues to show that there is evidence providing collusion, obstruction of justice. I mean, this is very deep now. But the problem with that particular evidence, as well as going after Trump and Pence and Sessions and the entire administration, basically, is that the depth of the investigation is moving towards is inclusive of many of the GOP. That's a problem, and they're going to CYA cover their butts right now until they can figure out how to keep themselves from being indicted and going to prison. The third option, which is as you did mention, it's really a nuclear option, is that at some point there will always be within the structure of this country a black ops operation to forcibly remove him from office by way of constitutional clarity. The military has that authority to protect its final stand. A military's final stand is to do anything and all things possible to sustain and preserve the nation.
Go
ahead, I'm sorry.
When you say final stance, what do you mean?
I mean, as a black ops operation to go in and forcibly remove him from office. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
It can be done. It's within the
right.
That's a possibility, and that's engaging the CIA, the Justice Department, the 17th. I mean, growing up in Washington D.C., you become clearly aware of the number of security elements in that city: National Guard, Secret Police, the Capitol Police. There are so many police forces in D.C. alone that it's like a check and balance system against its own self. And when the riots broke out after King was assassinated, living in Washington, D.C., many people don't even know we were under a 4 p.m. curfew on Easter Sunday. 4 p.m.
Mm.
And every entrance and exit by way of alleys, streets, avenues, drives was blocked by National Guard. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get in or out of the city. In fact, I remember my dad and I were taking food and clothes over to those folks who got burned out on 14th Street. And by each checkpoint we had to go through, there was a National Guard making sure we're not carrying contraband or gasoline or incendiaries into that area. I'll never forget that. But we were on a complete and total lockdown.
Byron. You know, and you just said it a moment ago, not to cut you off, but I mean, we really, really have to applaud our forefathers for setting up a system of checks and balances in this country.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, the deal is whether we agree with everything that goes on or disagree, the fact that we have so many different options, and I think most Americans need to know what's at stake out here. And I think many of them do, but, you know, the last one is not something I ever witnessed in my lifetime. I've witnessed an impeachment, and I really feel this is the direction that we're going in. And and whether he'll try to curry support to develop a third party, I just think is irrelevant. I think that right now it'll be left on the two major parties, and you've just pointed out the vulnerability within the Republican camp. That it will be basically left to the Democrats to turn around and sort of re-energize that base that's missing, whatever Bernie Sanders and Clinton could not solve and bring together. And I even think to a certain extent it may be hopeful for her psyche to, you know, come out and promote her book and talk about what happened, as it's entitled, not to say that I intended to give it a play on the air, but the fact of the matter is I think right now, you know, Democrats need to be looking beyond what happened in the past. And we have various points of view, but we need to be really organizing. I'm sorry, Kay.
Yeah. What do you think? Let's go to Hillary for a little while. What do you think about the man who? Oh, was it Comey who that Hillary said caused her to lose the election?
Oh, Comey.
Go ahead.
I will say this: Comey's actions, and remember, at the time that he did it, implies one other factoid that you cannot dismiss just summarily, is that he was a Republican.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in a Democratic-run administration.
Mm-hmm.
So he yielded to Republicanism and got caught up in a situation which, as the history will write this, remember the articles that came out that said that Obama and his administration laid traps along the way that would implicate the Republicans' initiative? And one of the traps was not to remove Comey. Because if he had removed Comey, there would be no evidence linking Republicans to the conspiracy of the collusion and hacking. When they left him in that office, that was one of the biggest pieces of clues that would implicate more beneath the surface of that was going on that was really nefarious than anything else. And it was sad that it happened. I think everybody talks about that we are, you know, near a constitutional crisis. We are in a constitutional crisis because you think about the implications of removing Trump and his administration and then reversing all of the actions that came about while he was president, because those executive orders, those laws, the Supreme Court nomination, the appointments of all of the secretaries. I mean, Rex Tillerson goes to the United Nations without diplomats. That's not.
Yeah.
That's unheard
right.
of. That's just. Yeah. That's just stripping us down to nothing.
It is unheard of. Right. Right.
And that's
and
basically
know,
what Trump and his businesses did in each one of his bankruptcies. If you go and investigate what he did to each one of the companies that he was involved with that applied for bankruptcy, is that he stripped them down to nothing. He's a pirate. He's the very
yeah.
essence
mm-hmm.
of a pirate.
And so,
ultimately,
he,
yeah.
He's
and
so
he,
skillful with it, Byron.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
he had the,
you know.
He had the wherewithal to hire attorneys who are showing their true selves right now. Can you imagine Trump's attorneys turning on each other like they are at this moment?
Nothing.
It's amusing, but it's with good reason. I mean, the thing is, you know, look who they're trying to represent. And I tell you, I had to laugh to myself when I heard
exactly.
that they were out in public at a restaurant going
yes.
back and forth about something
in
that should
meeting.
Have been so sacrosanct and private. You know,
uh-huh.
I wish I don't want to say anything disparaging about some of the people I've known in law, but you know, it just really bothers me to think that could go on at that level. You know,
Wayne,
yeah,
they did that knowing that the people sitting close to them were from the New York Times. They
yeah,
did that intentionally.
They knew the New York Times. Uh huh. Amazing.
If that's not obstruction of justice, somebody tell me. Please explain to me what obstruction of justice is.
It is obstruction
okay.
of justice. And the thing is that he gets away with it. But
yes.
Wait a minute. Do you think he will be impeached?
Oh, I think mm-hmm. so. I'm not, you know, I can't look into a crystal ball, you know, and say that
yeah.
I know for a fact. But at the rate things are going, you know, there's so much
yeah.
to
mm-hmm.
undo, as Byron pointed out, you know, and he's counting on the average American person not realizing how much damage has been done in the 9 months he's been there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. But I think
impeachment
is in the future.
Okay. I think he will be impeached. The timeline for impeachment, though, is not one that will be a quick turnaround like before
yeah.
the end of the year. And,
yeah.
and because
right.
when you engage now going into Facebook accounts, which indeed was, I mean, I've been banned on Facebook for posting too much Black history. So if you can imagine,
right.
Wow. That's right. That's exactly mm-hmm. right. And the Russians pay. It's been said that the Russians actually paid for some of their accounts in rubles. Now,
mm-hmm.
what
really?
Else? If that is true, talk about laundering money. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, that's not, once again going to the true essence of the depth of this investigation is so profound with respect to the treason, all the way from the president to the speaker of the house, the leader of the Senate. So many of the GOP took Russian oligarch money for their campaigns. So this is one of the biggest historic stories in this country will ever get beyond.
Exactly.
And because it is a constitutional crisis, it will be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a minute for us to actually comprehend how to undo the mess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I tell you one thing, not to cut you off, Byron,
but I really believe that maybe being physically removed by law enforcement would be such, you know, it would be such a monumental thing for the world to witness. To show the integrity of our system. And I think that's something that we need. I mean, if it comes down to that, I think that would probably even be better than impeachment. Because clearly we elected somebody who's not stable.
Right.
And the system did not work.
In other words, Wayne, what the country needs is an enema.
Yeah, I was just going to say. I didn't think you could say that in Kate Thompson's program, but I'm glad to hear that.
That's a clean way to say it, okay?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have the Bedford-Stuyvesant version, but we won't say
Byron.
That. You know,
a colonic enema. That's what we need, okay?
I think that's appropriate. You remind me of my mother. My mother used to say, I expletive you in this world, and I'm going to expletive you out of here.
That's right. Wow. That's so vile. I'm tired of talking about Trump, but I do want to talk about somebody else, and you're going to be
okay.
surprised. Have you heard of the Black Book?
Oh,
really? Okay.
And
who wrote the Black Book? Yeah.
I don't know all the details on the Black
there
Book. But go ahead.
Wait.
Nope. The Black
Carol
Book.
Carol Taylor.
The one that I have in my hot little hands, but anyway, was given to me by someone, and it has Bill Cosby's name attached to it, the Black Book.
Oh, that's
and I got
Black
it,
Book.
And he wrote, he wrote an introduction. I would read the introduction, but it is long. I'll just read part of it. In the introduction by Bill Cosby in September of 1973, he says, suppose a 300-year-old black man had decided, when he was about 10, to keep a scrapbook, a record of what is like for himself and his people in the United States. He would keep newspaper articles that interested him, old family photos, trading cards, advertisements, letters, handbills, dream books, and posters, and all sorts of stuff. He remembered things, too, and put those stories he'd heard, rumors, dates. He remembered the first march on Washington, how John Quincy Adams defended Joseph Sinque, the black slave ship rebel, and won, and the new Jewish hospital that opened its doors to the wounded during the Civil War riots. He would know about black gold miners, about pirates and factory owners and inventors, and he would keep records of blacks who owned slaves, lyrics of songs he'd sung, voodoo recipes he's tried, all that he would put in his book. And he would end up with A Folk Journey of Black America, a book just like this one, beautiful, haunting, curious, informative. No such man kept the book, but it's okay because it's here anyway. I sure wish I had it when I was in school. Then I'd know what to say when Mr. Broadbird said my speech was slang. I sure wish I had it in my house back in Philadelphia. Then whenever I played the dozens, I'd know where they came from. More important, I wish I had it when I went to the barbershop, and then it wouldn't have been necessary for that dude to leave his chair with half a haircut to run home and get his birth certificate to prove that he was around when Josh Gibson was playing baseball. But here it is, at last, the Black Book. Everybody has one, you know. The difference in this one is that here, nobody changed the names to protect the guilty. Browse in them. The pickings ain't always easy, but they're always good. September 1973 by Bill Cosby. All right?
Wow.
I have it in my hot little hands, and it is absolutely fascinating. No. I'm not going to tell you. It's a big secret. But I just turned the page, and here we have a copy of the flyer, the title of which is Public Sale of Negroes by Richard Claggett. Mm-hmm. And it starts, on a Tuesday, March 3rd, 1833, at 1 p.m., the following stores will be sold on Potter's Mart in Charleston, South Carolina. Miscellaneous, lots of Negroes, mostly house servants, for field work. Conditions, cash, balanced by hand, varying interested parties from date of sale. Some of this is a little non-readable. Payable is 1 to 2 years to be secured by a mortgage of the Negroes and appeal and appraise personal security. Auctioneer will pay for the paper. All right, and then they have the paper for the first sale. This is a public sale of the Negroes by this Richard Claggett, whoever the heck that is. A valuable blacksmith, wife. The Smith is in the prime of life and a perfect master at his trade. His wife, about 27 years old, and his daughters, 12 and 10 years old, would have been brought up as home servants, and as such are very valuable. Also for sale, two likely young Negro wenches, one of whom is 16 years, the other 13, both of whom have been taught and accustomed to the duties of the house servant. The 16-year-old wench has one eye. A likely yellow girl, about 17 or 18 years old, has been accustomed to all kinds of housework, garden work. She is sold for no fault, sound as a dollar. And it goes on.
Mm.
Comments? Impressions? This book is big.
Much needed.
And there's also pictures in here. And it is a historic jewel. And I will not, I was offered a sale for it, of course, to sell it. I will not part with it because it's valuable.
Hold on to that one. Kay, when I ran the Queen's Historical Society for 8 years, preserving the history of the Queens of Queens, New York City, one of the things that I was really struck by in the archival collection was the paucity of African American and Native American history artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't in the collection. And realize that the books that are history books that are written, the first source, primary source of material that historians will seek is that of those in the historical society's archives. And while in the 8 years that I was there, I made it a personal effort every single day, scanning all of the Queens newspapers and the New York City newspapers, collecting and identifying stories and histories about African Americans so that they would be in that collection.
Right.
And then when it comes time to write the books again about Queens, New York City, there is information in a collection that's in their archival rooms under secure weathered conditions, preserve the history of African Americans and Native Americans. And that's where I met the Matinecocks, that ultimately that were darker than black. Okay.
Right?
You always think of Native Americans and they are an offshoot of the Shinnecocks, but you always think of Native Americans, Indians, as the red man. No, the Matinecock tribes are darker than most black people. Okay.
I just have three more books of black Indians, and I'm going to be talking about them by Professor Dr. William Katz, one of the most prolific writers of black American history. He has a book that's like a Bible to me because I refer to it all the time, Eyewitness. And this is a big, thick book. And this man, I don't know how he writes so much, but he has covered our history all. And you know, the Indians were here a long time ago. You know, did I tell you that Hampton University opened their doors to the Indians? They were the first school to do that?
Yeah. You,
did I mention
that?
Right.
Mentioned that at the top of the show.
General
and the
Armstrong
problem,
and Booker T. Washington.
Yeah, the only problem that they had with the Indians were that they didn't want to part with their shawls, their covering.
Right.
They didn't want they didn't want to take off their clothes and put on clothes. They put their rugs around them or whatever it was, you know. So
and,
I have a lot
Professor
of these pictures.
And
that are amazing.
And I remember when Professor Katz was on the last time, he mentioned one of the Matinecocks that he and I both know, Chief Osceola, who's still alive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
Gary Byrne has a lot of information.
Very
also.
Important.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm that black book you got. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Mm, priceless.
You should see. You would really appreciate it, Byron.
Yes,
really
I would.
Really see this book because I think I'm probably one of the only people maybe around that has this book. like my last night. But I'm the only one. Now, the back of it says, A Folk Journey of Black America, Beautiful, Haunting, Curious, Informative, and Human. That was written by Bill Cosby. And then it says, I am black.
Amazing.
It says,
yes,
I am the black. On the back cover, That was written by Cosby, and this is written by Cosby. He says, "I am the Black Book. Between my top and my bottom, my right and my and my left, I hold what I have seen, what I have done, and what I have thought. I am everything I have hated. I have hated labor without harvest, death without honors, life without land or law. I am a Black woman holding a white child in her arms, singing to her own baby unattended in the grass. I am all the ways I have failed. I am the Black slave owner, the buyer of a golden peacock, beet bleach cream, and Dr. Palmer's skin whitener, the self-hated player of the dozens. I am my own nigger joke. I am all the ways I survived. I am chun mush, whole cake, cooked on a hoe. I am 14 Black jockeys winning the Kentucky Derby. People didn't know about that. I am the creator of hundreds of inventions. I am Lafitte and the Pirate and Marie Laveau. I am Bessie Smith winning a roller skating contest. I never heard that before. I am quilts and ironwork, fine carpentry and lace. I am the events I put, the goal I mine. The horses I broke, the trails I blazed. I am all the things I have seen. The New York Caucasian newspaper, the scarred back of Gordon Slave, the draft riots, darky tunes, and merchants distorting my face to sell thread, soap, shoe, polish, coconut. I am all the things I have ever loved, wine, school, baptisms in the silent water, dream books, and number playing. I am the sound of my own voice singing sangaree. I am ring shouts and the blues, ragtime, gospel. I am mojo, voodoo, and gold earrings. I'm not complete here. There's much more, but there's no more time and no more space, and I have journeys to take, ships to name, and a cruise." By Glatton.
Nice.
By Bill Cosby. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I have to look for that one.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to find it. I don't think you're going to be able to find a copy.
Wow.
Okay.
And that was written, you say, like almost 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I gave you the date. I read.
It says
it's from the introduction by Bill Cosby. And the inside, it covers so many things. And also, it has pictures. And the pictures are ancient. You know, wow. And it has poetry in here.
Mm-hmm.
It covers so many things, I'm telling you.
Fascinating.
And it starts with, you know, Black man, Black people. There's the slave posters showing slaves and showing them being auctioned off, you know. It's a whole lot of things.
Amazing.
Before we go off the air, I know we're getting close to it. I know, just to mention another disaster that's happened in the world. There was a 6.1 earthquake in Japan, near Japan's Fukushima nuclear plant this afternoon.
Oh, no, that just happened?
Did this happen?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Wow.
I hadn't heard.
There you have it, sports fans. So as the world meets here in New York at the United Nations, I think the world has some serious conversations
to
deal with.
Especially.
Guys, we have 90 seconds left. I want to thank you for coming on, as usual.
Yeah. Great show.
Great show. I sent you flyers about an
event. Upcoming event, right, on Dollar
Tree. I got mine today, thank you.
I would like to
be
there.
Yes, we will be there.
Right. And I'll do the same.
See you later.
Okay.
Thanks,
God bless you.
Love you both. Thank you.
Goodbye,
okay,
everyone. Kate Thompson Live is on every Wednesday, 8 to 9. Please join us. What we talked about, Bernard. You shouldn't talk until it's